RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the August 7th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast. I am Jason Floyd. Typically, I am joined by Daniel Gavon. However, Daniel is in El Paso for his television job this week, so unable to do the podcast, so rolling solo this week, but got another jam-packed edition of the podcast for you. Going to have four interviews coming up here later on in the show. You're going to hear my conversation with Chris Gutierrez, who fights on Saturday at the UFC card in Uruguay. He's going to take on Geraldo de Freitas. Had a chance to talk to him late last week about this matchup before he started to make his trip down to Uruguay. So we'll talk to the Factory X product. Also, speaking of Factory X, I'm going to talk to Devontae Smith, who's now facing Clay Collard. Yeah, UFC 241 was supposed to take on John Mendesi. Now he takes on Clay Collard. We'll talk to Devontae Smith. And by the way, Clay Collard will be on next week's edition of the podcast. Also this week, I talked to Jakar Close, who's also going to be part of UFC 241, taking on Chris Sosiagos. Had a great opportunity, a chance to talk to him about some of the changes that have happened with him. You know, obviously, he was supposed to have a fight back in July. Didn't happen. And then he's made a change up in training. So we'll talk to him. And then the final interview will be with another fighter who's fighting UFC 241, Casey Kinney, taking on Manny Bermudez. You know, a very interesting part of that conversation is kind of talking about whether or not Casey maybe wants to beat Manny at his own game. So those four interviews coming up here later on in the show. Of course, this show does come to you in five rounds. That'll be in round number three and round number one, which I'll start talking about here momentarily. Going to talk about everything related to Chris Cyborg and that. The whole situation going on there. In round number two, going to talk about Colby Covington and some of the things that happened last Saturday in Newark, New Jersey at UFC on ESPN5. Then round number four, going to talk about the King of the Cage blocking another fighter from getting a big opportunity. And then in round number five, going to give you reasons to watch Saturday's UFC Uruguay card. Of course, it'll be a fight night card on ESPN Plus. Of course, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast on your favorite podcasting app. Always love those five-star reviews that we do get here on the podcast. But, you know, I want to start off this week's edition in round number one talking about Chris Cyborg. Of course, it was late last week. I want to say it was, what, Thursday or Friday when the UFC, maybe it was Friday, when the UFC, Dana White put out this video, an interview that he did with Laura Senko. And, you know, basically, you know, the abbreviated version of it is Dana White saying that he does not want to be in the Chris Cyborg business and that they were going to release her from her contract, which, you know, yes, she had finished up the final fights on her deal, but there's still this, you know, 3-month exclusive negotiating, you know, period that the UFC did have, and they let her go. And then, you know, later that day, it, you know, ultimately Chris Cyborg has to issue an apology because the video that was on her official YouTube channel and was being promoted all over her social media channels, well, the video was doctored. So she had to put out an apology for that video. And that blaming her team for that video out there. And she on last night, this was a quote from Dana White last night. He said, it had to kill Cyborg to apologize to me. She did it because what she did with the doctored video is one of the dirtiest things you can do. Fans and media need to get it through their heads. She did not want to fight Amanda Nunes. Now, Chris Cyborg's response to all that was, once I discovered what had been done by the production, I could not wait to apologize. I have prayed many times that one day myself and Dana White could talk face-to-face about our differences and find a way to move on. I am never too proud to offer an apology. Now, this is one of the things that it is, for myself who works in marketing and, you know, and we're always talking about branding when I'm working with clients. And, you know, one of the things that it is hard for me to believe that Chris Cyborg had not seen that video and did not know it was a doctor video. I find that very hard to believe. But you know what? Let's take her at our word. Let's say that she truly did not know that. To me, that says a lot about Chris Cyborg and the fact that maybe she's not in tune to her digital marketing brand. And I think that is very telling. You know, one of the things of, you know, when all this kind of went down, one of the tweets I put out there was basically this, was saying, even though Chris Cyborg may not want to re-sign with the UFC, she needed that public perception to feel like she wanted to return to the UFC to help maximize the amount of money she could get offered by, say, a Bellator, a PFL, one championship, maybe a wrestling organization or Ryzen. She needed to have that belief. But, of course, Chris Cyborg fans don't like the way that I put that. And, you know, and look, I am someone that has negotiated independent contract services for my services. I've also, you know, been the person negotiating for someone else's services. So I'm very familiar with this. And anyone who's ever negotiated a contract for themselves understands that you need multiple bidders to help maximize the amount of money that you could potentially bring to the table. And that's why I put that tweet out there. But I'll say this, Chris Cyborg, her fans are some of the most passionate fans in all of martial arts. There is no question. I mean, I would put Conor McGregor's fans number one. And number two is I would put Chris Cyborg right up there. But I'll say this, and even if you're a Chris Cyborg fan, sometimes you people have blinders on. I'm telling you, you've got blinders on certain things. And, you know, look, 90% of the time, I am going to come to the fighter's defense on this. But when Chris Cyborg misplayed her hand. But now, you know, after you see what Dana White said last night, it does seem that maybe Audie Attar, her manager, has been able to make some room here to maybe try to see maybe could Chris Cyborg return to the UFC. But it's very clear, and Dana White is making it very clear. He's very adamant that he believes Chris Cyborg will not take the Amanda Nunes fight. But also, I think Dana White is, if there is a potential for Chris Cyborg to come back here, I think Dana White is playing this tremendous. He is playing this in a way where potentially he's going to get what he wants. And what he wants is Chris Cyborg versus Amanda Nunes. I still don't think it happens. I think the likelihood is that Chris Cyborg will end up in Bellator. But look, the one issue with Chris Cyborg, no matter where she goes, you can sit there and say, if she goes to Bellator, okay, you're down for the Julia Budd fight, okay. But what's after that? Just like if she comes back to the UFC, you're down for Amanda Nunes fight. If she loses, well, what do you do with her? But if she wins, of course, then you could do a trilogy matchup with Amanda Nunes. You know, and the other thing I've thought about this whole situation is when the UFC lets a fighter walk, how often are they wrong? And I was just thinking about this the other day, and I asked somebody, one of my friends, about this. I said, can you think about the last time the UFC let a fighter walk and they were really wrong? Maybe Ryan Bader, but what was Ryan Bader in the UFC? He was a number four, number three light heavyweight, and you really hadn't seen that ability for him to take that next step in his career. Maybe point to Gegard Mousasi. But outside of that, I mean, who do you really point to? You know, that you say the UFC ultimately made a massive mistake. Maybe it's Demetrius Johnson, but you really haven't seen the UFC make these massive mistakes. And, you know, I think part of that question has got to be is Chris Cyborg on the downside of her career? I mean, look, she is still one of the greatest women's fighters of all time. You can't deny that. But you have to wonder, does the UFC look at her and say, maybe she is on the downside of her career? Maybe, maybe they saw something that Felicia Spencer fight, or maybe it says more about Felicia Spencer. Time is going to tell. But I think ultimately she ends up fighting in Bellator. I feel that that's most likely. And I think the question with Chris Cyborg is, if the UFC is open to bringing you back, are you going to be happy in doing that? And I just don't know if that's the case. And, and watching Dana White scrum after a contender series last night, the thing that really stuck out to me was clearly the story is not over. You know, this is not the end of the story. It's going to go on. And another thing I want to mention about that, the doctored video, and why I believe that ultimately that she was forced to apologize. I think what happened here is Hunter, the lawyer for the UFC, sent a letter to Chris Cyborg's team about it. Once they realized it, and that's the thing, it basically took about 2 days. And at the end of the day, like, look, if you're a Cyborg fan, you don't like this. It's not going to bother me. But to sit there and say Chris Cyborg did not know there was a doctored video out there of what Dana White said, I find that hard to believe. I find that hard to believe. And if that's the case, Chris Cyborg needs to get more in tune with her brand, because it's almost like she's telling on herself if that's the case, that you're not as involved in your digital marketing brand as maybe your fans believe you are. So, you know, we'll see what happens with the Chris Cyborg situation, but ultimately I do believe she is going to end up in Bellator. Now let's move on to round number two. And of course, last weekend it was UFC on ESPN5. You know, talked about last week on this show, talked about on my DFS show. It was not this appointment watching television. I mean, obviously you wanted to see the main event. You know, you had some names, you know, two notable names in the co-main event, Jim Miller and Clay Guida. That ended up being a great fight for, you know, what, 59 seconds or however long that fight ended up lasting. But it was about that main event of Colby Covington and Robbie Lawler. And look, while we may not care for the antics of Colby Covington, which, by the way, great story out there from Jeremy Botter that he posted last night, that, you know, when you think about Colby Covington, you think about his support for President Donald Trump. And Jeremy Botter did a little research and found out that Colby Covington actually did not vote in the 2016 election, and actually got a quote from Colby Covington confirming it. And it is not fake news. It's real news. So something very interesting out there. But, you know, but the thing you have to admit about Colby Covington, you may not like, you know, the way he does things, the way that he has promoted himself. But the fact is, you have to admit how talented of a fighter he is. But, you know, the one, and once, you know, last week, one of my big things was, at some point, we have to be talking about the fighting abilities of Colby Covington. And he goes out there and he puts on a unbelievable performance against Robbie Lawler. He straight up dominated Robbie Lawler for 25 minutes. There was never really a point where you thought that Robbie Lawler was going to turn things around. I mean, you look at, you know, the 500 plus strikes that Colby Covington threw, you know, landing 10 out of 18 takedown attempts. It just, it was impressive. And look, and moving forward, I would probably pick him against Kamaru Usman right now. I've been blown away with Colby Covington over his last two fights. I'll be the first one to say, I've kind of not been on this train of how great of a fighter Colby Covington is, but you go back to the RDA fight, how great he looked there, and he looked even better against Robbie Lawler. And of course, coming out that he actually, you know, he had a cut above his eye heading into that fight that he had to cover up. I mean, it was just a great moment. But unfortunately, once again with Colby Covington, we're not talking about his actions inside the cage, inside those 25 minutes. We're talking about what happened after the fact. You're talking about his just awful comments in his post-fight interview in the Octagon about Matt Hughes. And look, I'm not going to sit here and say Matt Hughes is any saint at all. I don't, you know, obviously, you know, if everything that is being reported about him in terms of domestic violence is true, he's a POS. But to sit there and make part of your trash talk about a guy legitimately getting hit by a train, that to me is just, it's disgraceful, it's classless, you know. And then, of course, you know, then you have the segment on ESPN Plus of trying to promote it. You know, look, you know, hopefully that fight does happen, but I think one of the questions, I think if you're the UFC, if that fight ultimately does happen, I think there's probably got to be concerns about what could and could not be said leading up to that fight. And do we have another situation where the trash talk kind of escalates in the way that the trash talk escalated with Conor McGregor and Khabib Nurmagomedov? Now, I did get this question from at JG10230 on Twitter. He says, the UFC seemed to have no problem advertising and features Colby's political affiliations and the Trumps as a whole. Do they continue to parlay this narrative in the build-up to the Usman fight despite the current political climate, or is it too touchy? Look, I think if, you know, from a marketing side, and look, that's really my expertise. That's, you know, what I do on a day-in, day-out basis. If I am the UFC, I'm trying to capitalize on that. You know, you want to sit there and, you know, if it's November 2nd or when this fight happens in MSG, you want to, you know, you would love to have the president send out a tweet. Whether you know, and look, and one of the things I've always said in covering sports, I never want to talk politics. It's just something I don't do. But from a marketing aspect and trying to get the most eyeballs, foremost, if you're UFC, I think you have to try to get, you know, see if you can get Donald Trump to tweet about the fight, or, you know, have his son show up at the fight like they did this past Saturday. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the things I did see last week, and I had not really seen it with Colby Covington prior to last week, I think primarily because he didn't have a fight week, was, you know, I did see some tweets on social media in relation to, you know, hey, you know, I don't want to, you know, tune on to the UFC and feel like I'm getting a political ad. And sometimes that can happen with Colby Covington. And look, the hat that he wears, I mean, look, it's a divisive hat. You know, some people are going to love that hat. Some people are going to hate that hat, and it's going to bring up certain feelings. But I think if you're a UFC, I think you do try to parlay that narrative into help promoting that fight. I think you have to do it. And obviously, you know, I think, you know, Colby Covington, that the way he promotes fights is not going to change. But I do think that there is this case of, I do feel that we're kind of getting past this trash-talking era. I mean, look, Colby Covington's not a Conor McGregor in terms of trash talk, and he's not a Chael Sonnen. He's a notch below that. But look, he has created himself something that is going to make him a lot of money. I'll say this, and I was telling somebody this earlier this week. If I were the UFC, I would put Covington Usman in Miami, and the co-main event would be Jorge Masvidal versus Leon Edwards. You know, to me, that those are the two fights to make. I think those are going to be the fights that ultimately make. But, I mean, look, the one thing, and you can't deny Colby Covington his abilities. The guy's a legit fighter, and he may be the best welterweight in the UFC. I think him and Kamar Usman have very similar fighting abilities. But I think at the end of the day, I think I'm going to favor Colby Covington. I mean, I think the wrestling probably cancels each other out, but I think that the pure volume that Colby Covington throws, because look, when he throws punches, those are not knockout punches. I mean, but man, and the thing is, he doesn't tire down. So, just an unbelievable performance by Colby Covington. I don't care for, the way he does things. But, when it comes to his fighting abilities, you can't knock the guy. I mean, the guy is a legitimate fighter, and maybe the most talented fighter in the UFC welterweight division. Now, when it comes to everything else that happened at UFC on ESPN 5, some of the things that really stick out to me, I'll go to the prelims. Matt Schnell, you look at another great performance by him, and this is following that performance he had against Lewis Smoker, where he went up to 35 and looked absolutely amazing, probably the best he's ever looked in the UFC, and he comes up and puts another great performance by him, and now, you know, puts himself in a really great position, you know, in the 125-pound division, which, you know, we really don't know what's going to happen. You know, obviously we've got the injury situation with Henry Cejudo. Dana White does want to see Henry Cejudo defend the 25 belt next. Obviously, Joseph Benavidez would be the guy. I think part of the equation is maybe does the UFC do an interim flyweight title fight? Potentially Joseph Benavidez versus Davison Figueiredo. But if Figueiredo and Benavidez are not fighting for the interim title, and Joe Benavidez is going to sit and wait for a title shot, and Matt Schnell called for this fight, him versus Davison Figueiredo, I think that fight does make a lot of sense. But Matt Schnell, man, this guy has been on an absolute tear, now winning four in a row. Two other things that really stuck out to me about this card: Gerald Merchart going, and he gets a submission win, and then just basically the commission officials and the referee having no idea that he is trying to help his opponent Trevin Giles as he submits him unconscious as he's lifting his legs up to get the blood back to his head, and the commission officials and referee just kind of didn't know what he was doing. So that stuck out to me. Also, Nazareth Haparasta, and I probably said his last name wrong there, but another solid performance, and this is a guy you got to pay attention to at 155 pounds. Great win for him. Also, you got to mention Jim Miller. Great win for him there. You know, the fight had a little bit of everything for his, less than lasted a minute. Clay did land a good punch, but man, that guillotine that Jim Miller sinks in there, and I saw a lot of people kind of talk about, is Jim Miller a Hall of Famer? To me, a Hall of Fame is the best of the best. I think you can't write the history of the UFC lightweight division without Jim Miller just because of the amount of fights he's had. I mean, this is a guy that's been in the UFC, you know, for 11 years, you know, coming up on 11 years in October. But I mean, the guy just, he never won a title. And I think he does. I think there, when you talk about the UFC Hall of Fame, Jim Miller does deserve a place somewhere in that Hall of Fame. But, you know, I mean, obviously there's going to be more guys that you're going to look at and say they're much more deserving that have fought at 155 pounds just because, you know, obviously fighting for the title or going out there and winning a title. But overall, you know, I watched UFC on ESPN5. For the most part, I watched all of it live. And, look, I love afternoon MMA. We can have more afternoon MMA. Of course, UFC is back this weekend, for UFC on ESPN Plus. That fight card will be in Uruguay, of course, headlined by Valentina Shevchenko, having a rematch against Liz Carmouche. She may not realize that's a rematch. We will talk about that later on in the show. Of course, that fight card will be a main card start time of 8 p.m. Eastern Time. Prelims will be at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. So I will talk about that here coming up in round 5 later on in the show. But right now it is time for round number 3, which is the interview portion of the podcast. As you're going to hear my conversation with 4 UFC fighters, up first, hear my conversation with Chris Gutierrez, who fights on Saturday at that fight night card in Uruguay. Then you're going to have three interviews of fighters be fighting next Saturday at UFC 241. Devontae Smith, Jakar Close, and Casey Kenney. So here's my interview with Chris Gutierrez, Devontae Smith, Jakar Close, and Casey Kenney.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's back inside the UFC Octagon on August 10th. It goes a little international as Chris Gutierrez looks to get his second win inside the UFC. Chris, as always, man, I appreciate time. How's things been, man?
Everything's good, man. I appreciate you having me on. Just finalizing the camp and working on the weight now.
As we're talking, we're 8 days away from this matchup. I know you're leaving on Monday to head down to for fight week, but is it right now everything's about the weight?
Yeah, everything's good. Everything's good. I woke up about 3 pounds under what I was supposed to, so I'm good. Everything's coming off pretty good.
With this now being your third fight in the UFC, how would you say this camp has gone differently than the previous two?
Well, the first one, it was a short notice fight. It was like 9 days. Like I was training, but I wasn't in camp, you know. For my last one, I had, you know, a really good camp, and same for this one. So, but my mindset has been solid, you know. I've put a couple things aside and, you know, I've had to get mentally strong for certain things, and it's helped me, and I'm here now.
People talk about how much this game is mental, as much as it is physical, how, you know, your mind's got to be in the right place to go out there and perform the way you want to. How do you make sure that mentally you're in the right place, to step inside competition?
That's kind of hard. I think it just depends on who you are as a person and what you're going through, you know. Obviously, I'm going through, you know, a pretty nasty custody battle, and until I get my son, you know, it's a little hard. Like right now, I'm not even seeing him. It's been 5 months since I've seen him, and you know, it's hard, but I know that I have to do what I have to do for my career in order to give my son and my family a better life. I have to go out there and be successful myself. So in a way, you have to put yourself first. And that's okay. It's okay to do that. And August 10th, I will put those things aside. I'll be a professional and I'll go get the job done.
How would you say you've evolved as a martial artist preparing for this one as opposed to, you know, say the fight against Ryan?
What would you say that I've done differently, or like what's
in terms of what do you see in the differences in yourself heading into this one as opposed to your last fight against Ryan McDonald?
Oh, I've accepted things for what they are, and I'm at peace with myself, and I think that's the most important thing. I think we all battle with things, and sometimes we let those battles get the best of us, and we just end up drowning, and then we can't focus on other things outside, so we never learn. We become stagnant, but we go to war with ourselves, and I think that's the biggest, like, you know, that's the biggest defeat is you know, Mike Tyson's trainer said it the best, Customato. He was like, seeing a person get beat is not bad, but seeing a person beat himself, you know, that's the worst. And that's true. You know, I've been there. I've been on both sides. So I know what it feels like, and I know what I got to do to not make it happen, you know, to not let that happen.
Recently, it seems like I've had a lot of fighters bring up about being calm, and particularly being calm on fight night, and kind of having this peace of mind walking into it. Is that something that you have had to kind of figure out how to be calm on fight night and maybe not be over aggressive and put yourself in bad spots?
You know, yeah, it's true. I think Coach Mark Montoya said it the best. You know, they did that little interview with him, and the UFC did a interview with him. It was for like the best gym in the world, you know, and we got nominated for it. But he said something, you know, during fight day, it's kind of a different like aura that comes around everybody, but it's a feeling that either you become friends with it or you just let it linger over you. And when you let it linger, it's not a feeling that's not going to go away until the fight's over. You know, it's that like, what is it? Anxiety. It's anxious. It's fear. It's, you know, every kind of emotion you can think of, it just hangs over you. And either you become friends with it because it's not going to go away. It's a feeling that's going to be there. So either you embrace it and be one with it, or it's just constantly going to be eating at you a little bit, you know? And I think that's what, you know, that's what I've done. It's you got to embrace it and just love it. Ultimately, you're there, you know, it's a privilege to be there, and we're there doing what we love. You know, it is a hard sport. I don't think anyone would really understand until they actually step foot inside of a ring or a cage in front of thousands of people. They either want you to win or want you to get your ass knocked out, you know? And so it's just one of those. You got to have the right urgency, the right mindset. It's a lot of things that go into it, honestly.
And you got Geraldo coming up here. He won his UFC debut. Obviously, you're coming off that win as well. What's kind of your thoughts on him as an opponent? And, you know, because I was watching another interview you did, and one of the things that really stuck out to me, what you said was you feel like he does fight sloppy.
Yeah, it's true. I think he's, you know, he's aggressive at times, but he also is very sloppy, both defensively and offensively. And I just think he I don't know, his judgment of distance isn't really there. His, you know, everything he does is kind of sloppy. He's good, but he's sloppy. I mean, that's the best way I can explain it.
Is it, you know, usually when we hear that word sloppy, most people, it seems like it's more about defensively you're talking about somebody for the most part. You're saying, oh, you know, doesn't, you know, there's these openings here, there's openings there. Offensively, is it just basically the fact of you, because he doesn't do well with the range? Is that like the big reason why you believe he's sloppy on offense?
No, his balance doesn't seem to be there. When he throws, he's just throwing, you know. He's not really, I don't really feel like he aims. He just throws. And, you know, I like to believe I'm pretty defensively sound. So, and I like to capitalize on people like that. So stylistically, I think it's a really good matchup. You know, and on fight night, anything could happen, you know. He could hit me or catch me in something, and I'm like, oh shit, now I gotta, like, you know, scramble out of it or do something different. But that's the amazing part of the fight game, you know.
You know, in terms of, you know, maybe over aggressiveness that he may have, is that basically the thing that you look at? Said that's what makes him the most dangerous. Is I know these punches are going to come from, you know, all type of directions, so I got to be, you know, ready for anything.
Well, of course. I mean, if you got to be aware of everything, but, you know, I don't think he's going to be that dumb. I think he's going to pull back on the reins a little bit with me. But if he wants to take that route and he wants to be overly aggressive, then I dare him.
Is there anything you want to prove to yourself in this fight?
Of course. Go out there and win and make a statement. And then, you know, the plan is very simple. It's to always win. You know, no one wants to lose. The plan is to win. And win in a good way, you know, make a statement, move up the rankings, And then after that, man, is put all my time and energy into my son, seeing what we can get done, and then moving on to the next one. You know, that's the way it is. It's no big secret. Nothing. It's just win, move up the rankings, and fight for my son. That's ultimately that's what it comes down to.
After this fight's over, will you get right back in the camp? You know, potentially for say a fight in 3-4 months, or do you want to get things squared away on life outside of fighting before you take another fight?
No. 3-4. I'd like to fight before the year's up again. Also, that gives me plenty of time. It gives me plenty of time to to get things situated with outside life, and then also continue with my career. So I think, 3-4 months is good for a fighter. It's good time, 3-4 months is good because you get some good downtime. You get to spend time with the family. You get to go out and do stuff that you want to do. You get to let your body heal. But at the same time, you're able to work on yourself. That's most importantly. And things that you have to outside that allows you, once those things are fixed or they're getting better, lets you your preparation become like easier. You know, everything falls into place in the gym.
And of course, this all goes down here. UFC on ESPN Plus, number 14. Chris, as always, man, I appreciate time. Of course, let me know anything find on social media. And if there's any sponsors or people you want to shout out, the floor is yours, man.
Yeah, I want to thank my team at Factory X. I want to thank my management team at Iridium Sports. Some of my sponsors. It's going to be Terp House, Virus, Nutrifex, Trifecta Meals, and everybody who's helped me. You guys are a big, I appreciate you guys really big, and thank you so much.
Joining me now here on the MMA Reporter, man, steps back inside the UFC Octagon, UFC 241. He's got a new opponent, as he's now taking on Clay Collard, not John McDessie, Devontae Smith. Devontae, appreciate the time. When your management gives you a call that says that McDessie's out, what was your first thought?
Damn. It was a check, So, but it is what it is, no matter what it, no matter who they gave me, I'm still going to win, different body, same results.
In terms of, I know you're just now, it's just a couple of days old that you found out your new opponent, Clay Collard, coming back to the UFC. Look at all his topology. He's had a couple of boxing fights recently. But overall, since he exited the UFC, he's done fairly well. How's it change up training, or does it not change up training at all?
No, not in any way, shape, or form. Like I said, I don't really train for a specific person. I train to improve and develop my own skills for times like this. And since they switched up my opponent is the only thing different is it's a different person. He has a different style, but it's not something that I cannot handle because I can.
Is it just one of those things you and your coaches just kind of sit down and say, okay, here's what he likes to do well. This is what we think his weaknesses are. Is it just more about that?
We haven't even done that yet. I mean, I looked up his tape and I just see, because at the end of the day, it's a fight. I mean, I've been doing this for so long, so I can break down fights myself. Not saying I don't need my coaches anyway, but I already see certain things that, I'm going to exploit. And like I said, I'm still going to get the win.
When you sit down and you're watching a potential opponent, is there something you're looking for? I mean, are you looking for the way he stands? Are you looking for, tendencies? What are you looking for?
Oh, things of that nature. I look at him and I also look at his opponent in the sense of like, if he's like getting all these cheap, I don't call them cheap shots, but if you get what I mean by cheap shots and stuff that I know would not land on me. So I seeing in the sense like, oh, dude, if I was going against that guy, I would have been in this fight, And I don't know. I think it's just natural. I could just catch on to stuff.
Is that kind of the mindset when the fight starts of like, hey, let me feel him out for 10, 15 seconds. And I kind of, I know how I want to attack him at that point.
I mean, I feel people out, but I really don't. I really just fight. And I'm not saying I'm going, obviously you see my fights, I'm not going in there and, balls to the wall and all this crazy stuff. But, at the end of the day, it's just a fight. It's just another day. And I'm here, in fact, at Factory X, training with the elite of the elites. So it's just another day.
And of course, the travel's a lot easier this time as opposed to last time when you had to go to Australia. I remember talking to Coach Montoya about that. He's just like, man, it's that's a different beast. You know, but now it's, I mean, what, an hour, 2 hour flight for you?
Yeah. Australia was nice though. I'm not gonna say it wasn't, but next time I need to be on first class. I'm sorry. That economy. Being 16 hours, I can't eat nothing. I just drinking water. Your body swell up. You know, your ears are popping. You're hungry. And that was not fun. I need to be somewhere where I can be, like, comfortable, you know. So if they say we got to fight for you in Australia again, I would love to go because Melbourne was not only great to me, it was beautiful. But I need that first class status. I'm cool on that.
Yeah, that's kind of like – that's a place at some point I want to travel to. Just, like, spend, like, a week there. And just kind of see it, you know.
It's nice, bro. I'm telling you, when we went out there, it was. I think it was a Chinese holiday. It was beautiful, like the environment, the culture, the people, just everything.
If you get the win here, do you want to try to run it back with when you get the win? Do you want to try to run it back with McDessie, or is it kind of like you move on?
No. Because from my experience, every time I call somebody out, something happens. Nobody wants to go against me. So, I mean, he still got a check on his head. He still owe me a check, you know. So, if, you know, I manifest, do you know what happened to him injury-wise? Because I still don't. I just heard.
I haven't heard.
Okay, I don't. I was hoping you knew. But, you know, I manifest him a speedy recovery. And if he wants to run that back, cool. If not, you know, we on to the next one.
Have you already started to kind of thinking about who the next call out could be? Or is that something you don't wait till like fight week, you'll start kind of looking around and figuring out what's next?
Tell the truth, it'd be usually like not even fight day, maybe the day before the fight day or fight week. I just talk to my coach like, hey, who you want me to call out? Hey, just give me a name. Like, all right, cool. Like I really don't care. It's just fight, win. And do me.
I remember when we talked last time, you're like, you know, I got to kind of figure out all these guys in my division. There's so many of them. Have you been doing that research? Kind of say, okay, who he might be a – like if you sit down on Saturday night, you watch UFC fights, go, hey, that guy could be a potential opponent at some point.
Yeah. You know what? Yeah, no, but I don't dive too deep into it because I don't want to be looking at the number 13th guy, whoever he may be. So – if he sees this, he's like, oh, you're looking at – I don't even know who you are. But, you know, I don't want to be looking at the number 13th guy, but I'm actually about to fight the number 15th guy. You know what I'm saying? So I really just take it as they come, and I just show up, fight, win, and move on with my career.
Are you at that point like, man, I want somebody to call me out?
I don't think people would do that, truthfully. In a sense, I actually look at – when I do watch the UFC fights at 155 – sometimes I am curious if somebody's going to call me out, you know. I think it'll be really funny and really exciting. Like, oh, somebody called me out because I forgot what I'm ranked, but I don't really think people want to take that risk, you know. Who did I call out? I called out Ross Pearson. He retired. I called out Trinaldo. He fought – did he fight Hernandez?
Yeah.
He didn't want the problems. And, they started maybe not want to call people out no more because everybody here avoided me. So it is what it is.
If someone did call you out, would you take it as a compliment or would you be like, man, this guy thinks he can beat me?
Both. Compliment as in, all right, you ain't scared. I like that. And then automatically aggression, like, all right, I'm going to talk to you when I see you type move. But it depends on, you know, smart move. It's all smart moves, you know. If you ranked number 100th and you calling me out, I'm gonna just take it as a compliment and laugh and just keep it moving.
You know, with this being August, you know, is December kind of the next fight you're targeting?
Whatever they want to. I don't even look up the. I know it's. I know I'm weird because it's like it's different because I really don't be like paying attention to stuff like that. But I mean, it depends on how this fight goes in the sense of, you know, health wise. If December is the next move, then December is the next move.
I mean, do you not even think about that? I mean, you know.
I really don't. I'm sorry. I really don't. I really just train and focus on me and you know, and steady improve my game and develop my game and just improve myself physically and mentally, and I'm ready for anybody.
In terms of improving mentally, is that something as you've gotten to, you know, this stage in your career, you've realized how important that is and maybe something that you took for granted early on?
It is very important. I don't think I ever really took it for granted because I've seen people who were beat by people who were not in any way, shape or form as good as them, you know, and I know it's because their mental shut down, you know, can I do this? Will this work? Did I do enough work? You know, I do what I have to do to keep my mentality at 200 billion%, you know, just throwing really high numbers out there. And, you know, because a lot of people see more physical than mental. But if your mental ain't there, the physical ain't going to be there either.
Yeah, so many guys have – I mean, it seems like you hear more fighters are working with mental coaches. And I don't – we're talking about fighting or any sport. I mean, if you're mentally not in the right headspace, how can you expect that you're going to perform at a peak performance?
Exactly.
You know, but physically, you talk about the physical transformations that you've seen in yourself. Is there one thing that sticks out to you that you know, in terms of the last time we saw you to now?
Physically, you know, just my skill set, the things that I've added to my arsenal, and just where my mentality is, you know, because my dad asked me, can the Devontae today beat the Devontae of the Contender Series? Which was a weird question, but it wasn't weird. You know, the reason why I say it's weird because I don't like saying that somebody can beat me, even myself. But, you know, when I look back at it, it's like, wow, like I've become that much better that I can beat that Devontae. It still hurts to say. And from the Contender Series, you know, I can beat that Devontae from that my debut. I can beat that Devontae from the Australian fight. And after I get this win and whenever I fight again, I will be, I can be the Devontae of today.
How often do you go back and watch your previous fights to say, how is somebody going to try to attack me?
Actually, a lot. Yeah, I could actually say that that's something that I do watch because I, you know, I like to look at my own flaws and stuff that I can improve on. I actually watched my Australian fight. What's today? Monday? Saturday. I watched that, yeah. Then I watched the Contender Series fight. And then I even watched my old fights before the UFC just to see my growth. And it's a really big growth. So, you know, I'm just keep doing what I do best and shine bright and win.
Do you ever have that moment when you go back and watch an old fight and you're just like, oh, my God, I can't believe I looked like that?
Not really, because it usually is a knockout. So I'll be like high-fiving myself, like, yeah, but I could have ended it a little sooner. But I ain't regretting it because I still got the win and look where I'm at now.
But like moments like you maybe say, man, my footwork wasn't where it should have been in this spot. I mean, is it more one of those like it's these little things that you look at as you watch yourself and you see that evolution of your game of going, man, if I would have done this there, that knockout would have come sooner.
No, not really, because I can't get mad at myself about some stuff I didn't know. You know, I did what I did to the best of my abilities, and I still came out with the vicious knockout. I still came out with the, you know, the highlight win. And, you know, I'm just getting better and better. And I know that I haven't even reached my peak. I'm only 26, you know. Birthday was last Tuesday. And I'm really just excited for my future.
Were you able to celebrate the birthday?
No. I just got junked. My team. It just all grabbed me. I tried my best to get away. I was like this close to getting away. But, you know, when you got 10, 20 people grabbing you, it's kind of hard to get them all off of you. And they all just start, what is it called, red belly? That's what you call it? Yeah, that's what they did to me. And Ian Heinich got me the worst. So today's his birthday, and I will be getting him back. I'm going to pour baby oil all over my hand. And, you know, maybe he'll still have a red mark on his fight day. So, because me and I promise.
You're just looking for that moment today in training. Woo! Like, you know, when's the right moment to strike?
Yep. I got him. Yep.
Of course, he's got a fight coming up as well, so we look forward to seeing both of your fights. And of course, let everyone know they fight on social media, and of course, those sponsors that are along the ride with you.
Follow me at KOE_KINGKAGEUFC. I got the blue check mark now, so you know it's me now. Big shout out to everybody, Turp House. Hey, when I do this, because I'm used to getting to write all that stuff down. Turp House, Beast Coast Unlimited, Lace and Loop. Where all my stuff at? You put me on the spot there, brother. Yeah, man, I'm gonna just tag y'all. I'm sorry. I'm hungry. I ain't eat, so I ain't prepared too well for this. So I apologize.
We can definitely see all those sponsors on your social media accounts. Devontae, always, man. Appreciate time and look forward to seeing the fight next week.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you for having me on.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man who steps back inside the UFC octagon. Come here, UFC 241 to take on Christos Yagos Dracar Close, who unfortunately was supposed to fight back on July 13th, and fight week comes, and man, I remember seeing your posts on social media. You're in Sacramento, you're ready to go, and it just doesn't happen. In terms of kind of the lows that you have in this sport, is that kind of at the top of the list?
Yeah, that's... I was dealing like with stuff like that back in my amateur career. I wouldn't think it would happen in the UFC, but hey, I guess it's a first time for everything. So,
I mean, I know you always say you want to take the positive out of things. I mean, how do you take positives out of that?
Be honest, I think it was a blessing, really, because now I'm on a bigger card. I made the move from the MMA lab to my new gym, Fight Ready. The more time with my coaches, my strength and conditioning, just even getting my mental game a little stronger. So it's all a blessing.
I know a couple of guys have made that switch to Fight Ready, and obviously the common denominator is Eddie Cha, striking coach, and I've got a chance to get to know Eddie over the past couple of years. How has Eddie made you a better fighter?
He lets me be who I want, like who I am, you know what I mean? I respect Crouch, but when I was around Crouch, I couldn't be who I really wanted. You know what I mean? Like, I had to watch what I said and stuff like that. And Eddie, he likes me, or he loves me, because I am who I am, and that just to me, that's the most positive thing.
I've heard several fighters said to me recently, various reasons. I feel like I'm fighting at peace. I'm very calm because of what you just said there. Can you kind of relate to that?
Yeah, man. I can relate to it a lot, just being me and just going out there and fleet, like not thinking, when you have a lot of stuff on your head, you're not fighting your style. You're not fighting the way you want to fight. And, he lets me be at ease.
But I mean, of course, everything has gone great for you here in the UFC. You're coming off that win against Bobby Green. Now you got Christos, who he's been on a nice little roll since he's come back to the UFC. What do you see as the biggest strengths that Christos brings?
I don't know. He likes to come out hard. He's fought big names. He hasn't beat him. You know what I mean? So, I think if I just go out there and execute my game plan like I normally do on people, I'm going to get this victory on him.
What do you see as your key to victory?
Just go out there and be me and fight freely. Not don't think, you know what I mean? Just react.
In terms of, mentioned about don't think, is that a battle for you? Inside fight night of to just kind of be yourself?
There's some fights, where like when I fought Tamar, I thought way too much, you know what I mean? Instead of just going out there and just being mean, fighting freely, and just, putting on a good show for everyone, I took a lot from that defeat, I never want to feel like that again. And I'll make sure I go out there and get this victory.
Some fighters always say of, you move past a defeat at some point, whatever it is. But for you, is it one of those things of you do want to remember what that feeling's like as, I don't know if motivation is the right way to put it, but something to realize, hey, I don't want that ever to happen again?
I think about that loss every day. If people say they don't think about stuff in the past, they're lying. You know, I never want to feel that way again. That's why I go in there each time I go in the gym. You know, I train as hard as I can because I don't want to feel that way I felt that night.
Do you go back and watch that fight?
I watch it a couple times, and it makes me mad every time I watch it. You know, and just the way I acted, you know, putting my hands up and not going to get them, just makes me mad, and you know, it just irritates me.
Are you the type of guy that likes to go back and watch your own fights and do that self-analyzation and figure out, you know, things you're doing good, things you're doing not so good?
Not really, because, you know, each fight is different. Each opponent's different. If you go back and just look at everything you do good, I don't know, kind of blows your head up a little bit, you know what I mean? And your coaches should be, you know, watching that film and letting you know what you did good and what you did bad.
Is it more of the thought process for you of like, look, this is about me, you know? Yes, you know, Christos, he's a very talented fighter. He does these great things, but I got to concentrate on myself and not, you know, solely put all that concentration on the opponent.
Yeah. To be honest, I think I've maybe watched maybe 2 minutes of him because, you know, people get caught up watching film on other people and, like, oh, he might do this to me. I never think that. I always think, what am I going to do to this guy? And I don't think he's going to be able to hang with me, to be honest.
Is there a particular way you see the victory coming?
I think I'm going to finish him in the first. You know, I think I'm going to take him down and drop heavy elbows on. Yeah, I think I'm just going to get him down. You know, they say his striking's good. I think my striking's better. They say he has good wrestling. I know my wrestling is a lot better. His cardio, it's not like mine. So I don't see him beating me.
Is there a particular aspect of your game that you feel people underestimate you on?
Everything, you know, I can't be honest. I can't say I'm great at one thing. I think I'm good at everything. And I think I'm a tough opponent for anyone.
Blending is kind of that word we hear a lot of guys use of, you know, it's about, you know, blending wrestling, striking, jiu-jitsu, grappling, all that together. Was there a point in your career where you felt like you had put all that together, you know, to be who you are today?
You know, yeah, just, you know, just going in and training with better people, you know what I mean? They helped me out, like Santino. He's a great jiu-jitsu coach, and, you know, I think working with him, he's gotten me my jiu-jitsu a lot better, and then Eddie with my striking, and then my brother as my wrestling coach, Cameron Jackson, and you know, and just having good sparring partners to go with, and you know, just mixing it up. And I think you know, I don't think I'm all the way there yet as a complete martial artist, but I know after this fight and the more, you know, fights I get, I'm gonna get there.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing this fight. UFC 241. Drakkar, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let me know they follow you at on social media and the sponsors that have been supporting you.
You can find me at Drakkar Close on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. I'd like to give a shout-out to RX Water, to Peter Jungle, 8-Man Strong, and just everyone that supports me. Just make sure you tune in August 17th and watch me get this victory.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, steps back inside the UFC Octagon. UFC 241 takes on Manny Ramirez, and he gets a full training camp for this one after taking that short notice fight against Ray Borg, Casey Candy. Casey, as always, man, appreciate time. Obviously, this one, you're not running around a couple days before the fight trying to get all your medicals done and do everything you need to do to get ready for the fight. And so, obviously, having a full preparations is what you always would like for, but, you know, these short notice opportunities come up. How different is the feeling for this one as opposed to that UFC debut?
Oh, man, you know, the UFC debut came so fast, I don't even think I had time to process it. I was still trying to process the knockout the weekend before. But, you know, it seems like another fight, really. You know, it's, like I said, you know, I felt like I should have belonged in the UFC for a long time. So I feel like I've been training at that level for a long time. And, you know, I got my fight camp set up, my routine set up, you know, exactly how I want it now. And, you know, I'm basically focusing full-time fighting. I used to teach a lot and during fight camps and stuff. And now I'm just, you know, full-time fighter.
I know you've worked at a couple of gyms, MMA Lab and some other ones. Are you still kind of going around, or are you sticking to one spot?
Yeah, you know, I always know where home is. You know, Rise Combat Sports, and now the MMA Lab is you know, my second home. But you know, for this camp, I took 1 week and I went to Vegas to go visit a friend, Kyle Reyes. He fights. He's fought all over Tachi Palace. The ACA is who he fights for now. You know, I went and trained with him for a little while. I think he's got like 10 guillotine wins. So he was a good training partner for Manny.
That's the thing about Manny, and I've been familiar with Manny when he was fighting on that Northeast regional scene. And obviously now, I mean, the thing that sticks out to you, obviously, is the submissions. Is there something else as you prepare for this fight that has stuck out to you that maybe people don't maybe underestimate him on?
No, dude, I think he's very one-dimensional in that aspect, you know. His boxing's okay. You know, everything's okay. His takedowns don't impress me. He doesn't seem like he likes to get hit too much. You know, his submissions are impressive, you know, but that's really the only thing that I've seen so far. You know, like, I'll be prepared for whatever, you know. I'm prepared for a full, you know, 3-round mixed martial art war. But my main focus is his submissions. Yes, for sure.
I mean, in terms of submission defense, have you ever worked this much on submission defense as you have preparing for this one?
You know, I'm always working submission defense. You know, I think, you know, I've done a pretty good job throughout my career of staying out of submissions. You know, I've had not even many attempts. I think Roy Vall probably had the most attempts on me in the LFA flyweight title fight out of anybody that I fought. But you know, I've always, you know, drilled submission attempts. You know, I prepared for Bruno, who was a black belt. I prepared for Antolin, who had some good guillotines. You know, Roy Vall had some good jiu-jitsu off his back. You know, Kakdak had some good grappling. So I'm, you know, I've been preparing for everything for a long time. So not a lot really has changed, just a little bit more specific towards Manny, you know, the type of submissions he does. But you know, it seems like a normal fight camp, you know. I'm enjoying it.
You know, I think outside looking in, people would say, you know, that the cliche of, well, next fight's your toughest fight of your career. They may look at this one and go, I wouldn't say that it's the toughest fight for Casey's career. They would say it's Ray Borg. What would you say, this is the toughest fight?
You know, Ray Borg's a tough fight, man. You know, he's been around the game. He's got a lot of experience, you know. As far as Manny goes, I guess the record, the fight card that we're on, it's definitely the biggest, you know, test of my career. Biggest showcase of my career. I'd say that for sure.
Do you think about that, you know, of being on a big event? I mean, or is it kind of like, look, you know what, man, it's just another day at the office.
You know, it all feels the same, but you know, that's a world I thrive in. I love being on the big stage. The bigger the stage, the better. You know, my career can kind of speak for itself. When the lights are on, you know, I show up, I perform, even no matter what. That's hard to do for some people, you know, just turn it on whenever they need to. And that's what I do. So I plan on doing the same thing August 17th, and I'm excited for it.
When you made your UFC debut, it was such on short notice that, you know, maybe the UFC fan really didn't get to find out who you are, and they saw those 15 minutes. Is there something that you want to prove to the UFC fans in this fight?
Yeah, man, you know, thought that the Ray Borg fight was a little bit more grappling heavy than what I really wanted. You know, obviously the fight went the way it did, and I, you know, we grappled a lot, but I wanted to make it a little bit more exciting, kind of like the last 30 seconds, 10 seconds. I think I chased him for the last 30, but he threw down for the last 10 seconds. You know, a fight like that, I'm not quite, you know, I'm not really expecting that from Manny. I'm expecting kind of a similar approach that Ray Borg took. You know, he's going to feel the power, feel the speed. and then, you know, it's going to turn into him trying to grapple me. But instead of engaging in the grappling, I think, you know, I may have to light Manny up a little bit more and stick to my striking a little bit. So just be a little bit more exciting fighter. You know, not that we, you know, we didn't stop moving for 15 minutes, but to the casual fight fan, you know, a grappling heavy match like Borgenized wasn't the most exciting.
Outside looking in, I think a lot of people would say, okay, your biggest key is to stay out of, you know, a jiu-jitsu match, you know, against Manny. Is there another big key that you see for yourself to walk away with the victory?
Oh, man, you know, just be myself. And if it, you know, honestly, I'm not really scared of a jiu-jitsu match either. You know, people have been trying to choke me since I've been a little kid. You know, that's my world too. You got to remember that. I like to throw down on the feet, but you know, I've been grappling. I've been in a gi since I've been 6 years old, and you know, jiu-jitsu, judo, takedowns. You know, that's my world too. So we'll see, man. But I think the key for me to be in victory is just being myself and, you know, picking my shots, picking where I want to take the fight, and you know, obviously staying away from the submission.
Is there a part of you that says, man, screw it, I want to beat him at his best game? Is that all part of it? Is like, or is that like just like, hey, kind of that ego? Like, man, I would love just to beat him at his own game.
Yeah, I mean, I told my coach not too long ago, I was like, I may just have to go out there and choke the shit out of him, you know? So we'll see what happens. I'm definitely a fan of that. You know, I feel like I'm one of the most complete mixed martial art, you know, fighters out there. And why not beat everybody at their own game?
The John Jones mentality. Now, what did your coach say when you said that?
Of course, like a normal coach would, shake their head, you know, close their eyes. I was like, you may just have to watch like this.
I mean, have you ever had that mentality of like inside the fight, you're not necessarily Liam's hip, but on a fight night, things going, you're like, man, screw it. I'm just going to beat this dude at his game just to prove a point.
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, you know, I had like 5-6 fights where I pretty much didn't take anybody down, you know, and they were all like, you know, fairly good strikers. So I felt like I proved, you know, I had that mentality then. You know, now I feel like I've proved myself. I've went everywhere. I've banged it out on the feet for 15 minutes. I've grappled for 25, you know, fought hard for 25. Now it's just kind of like, I'm going to find your hole and I'm going to make you pay for it somewhere, you know, some way, somehow, throughout the fight.
Has there ever been a moment after a fight's over, your coach looks at you and goes, Casey, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, there's probably been a couple, you know, but like, I think a couple of those, like, man, why didn't we get a takedown, you know, secure the round type of thing. But, you know, that's all part of learning, all part of growing.
Is that in the mindset at all when you're inside the fight, you know, the round's close, it could go either way? Is the thought process with, you know, say 30, 45 seconds left in a round, hey, let me try to get that takedown to win the round? Or is your mindset like, nah, screw that, I just want to knock this dude's head off?
You know, most of the time I'm looking just to take the guy's head off, you know what I mean? Finish the fight. But now, being at such a high level, you know, got to kind of get down to the last 30 seconds of the round. It's like, all right, I've been trying to take his head off for 4.5 minutes. Let's spend this last 30 seconds trying to win the round, you know, just in case it goes down to the decision. You know, being a little bit smarter fighter, you know, it's always good to take somebody's head off, and I'm going to continually try to do that, you know, throughout my career. But I think just now that I'm, you know, 14 fights deep in my professional career, I've learned a lot of that. Like, hey, let's get a takedown last minute, you know, round's been close. I think that's going to help me throughout my career, you know, if I don't get those big finishes.
I thought Dom Cruz said something really interesting on the broadcast this week, where it was him and Trevor Whitman going back and forth about this, when, you know, you're just laying these shots that had, and that opponent just keeps going forward. And Dom said, he goes, when that happens for me, I go to the body, try to loosen them up a little bit. Is that also when you're in those type of battles, that's in your mindset as well?
Yeah, you know, I'm always a big fan of working the body too. You know, sometimes you get head hunting in there. Those guys that just take blows over and over to the head, you know, sometimes they can take it to the body too, but you got to mix it up a little bit. Sometimes it softens them up a little bit, and then you can come back up.
Of course, we look forward to seeing your fight here, UFC 241 against Manny Bermudez. As always, Casey, I appreciate time. Let everyone know they can find you on social media and any of those sponsors or teams you want to shout out. The floor is yours.
Yeah, man. Always a pleasure to be on. Thanks for your time as well. But, you know, always a shout out to the MMA Lab and Rise Combat Sports as the gyms, you know, Chris Carriasso, John Crouch, you know, the management, Iridium Sports Agency, my strength coach, Nick Hulk, and then one of my sponsors, you know, Miss Mary Jane CBD. Check them out. They're really awesome. Other than that, man, you can follow me on social media at CKMMA135 on Twitter and Instagram, and then also Casey Kenny on Facebook.
And there was my conversations with Chris Gutierrez, Devonte Smith, Jakar Close, and Casey Kenny. I appreciate all those men coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast to preview their upcoming fights. Of course, Chris will be fighting on Saturday at the UFC Fight Night card down in Uruguay. And then, of course, Devonte, Jakar, and Casey fight next Saturday, UFC 241. Speaking of UFC 241, on next week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, I will be joined by Clay Collard. Also going to try to get Christos Yagos on the show as well. Speaking of some interviews I've done recently, be sure to head over to themmareport.com or the MMA Report YouTube channel, as I've got a pair of Shamrock FC 321 interviews. Both of them will be in the main event, Dylan Tolbert and Grant Hartwig. So you can be sure to check that interview. Also, Andre Hall, who's coming off a win at CES MMA 57, had a chance to speak with him. I've got an interview up with Jason House, who's an MMA manager and runs Iridium Sports Agency, so be sure to check out that interview. Also got an interview with Anthony Romero, which I'm going to talk about here momentarily. Coming up here later on this week on the MMAreport.com, got several other interviews up on there on the site, including Ray Rodriguez and Tony Gravely. Of course, both of those men are going to be fighting each other next Tuesday on Dana White's Contender Series. Also, going to have a conversation with Dylan Nadler. He is a mental coach. And so I had a chance to catch up with him yesterday. So I'm going to post that interview here later on this week on the MMAreport.com. So be sure to check that out. But mentioning about the interview that I did with Anthony Romero. And so I've spoke with Anthony a couple times, and he's got a management team now behind him. And they had reached out to me, and they had pitched me multiple guys, and one of those guys was Anthony. And, you know, one of the things of, you know, kind of give you a little inside track and how all this works is, you know, usually when, you know, a PR person, a manager, you know, somebody, you know, pitches an interview to you, they kind of, you know, they give you a little details about that fighter. And one of the things that about Romero, it noted that it was a final fight of his King of the Cage deal. And I kind of took it as, you know, this was going to be something that, you know, his days in King of the Cage were likely coming to an end after this fight was over. And, you know, so we're just, you know, kind of having the conversation in the interview. And, you know, towards the end of the interview, I asked this question related to kind of, you know, what are his goals, you know, over the next 12 or 18 months. And I'm going to play you the clip as he talks about and lets it known that he had an opportunity to fight on Dana White's Contender Series. However, he couldn't get out of his King of the Cage deal.
As you start to kind of think about the next 12 months for you, is there any goals that you have set of, say, you know what, 12 months from now, I want to be at this place in my career? Or is the mindset like, I can't worry about that stuff. I only can worry about the fight that's in front of me.
Yeah, for me, it's always the fight that's in front of me. I have a lot, like my manager's always talking, oh, we have these opportunities and stuff like that. But I always like to focus on the night that I have next, because if I focus about that, then I'm not going to put all my attention on this fight, and my expectations could go either way. But yeah, there's lots of opportunities. I've already had a lot of fight offers that I couldn't accept because of me being a contract fighter with King of the Cage. But yeah, I was supposed to go on the Contender Series this season. But like I said, with the contract issues, I wasn't able to. So I had to wait until September to get my last fight with King of the Cage. So.
And there you have Anthony Romero as he now joins a list of Draco Rodriguez and Patchy Mix, who over the last couple weeks have noted that they had opportunities to advance their career. Patchy Mix did an interview with James Lynch when, you know, he mentioned previously he had opportunities, to fight in bigger organizations that, you know, King of Cage wouldn't let him out of his deal. And of course, Draco Rodriguez, a very, very public situation where he had an opportunity to step up on short notice to get into the UFC, and the owner of the King of the Cage blocked that. And of course, Brian Butler, his manager with Sucker Punch Entertainment, has done multiple interviews about it and everything that's gone along with that. And, you know, one of the things that I talk about in business all the time is what's the end game. And the part of, you know, denying Anthony Romero the ability to go to the Contender Series, denying the ability for Draco Rodriguez to get into the UFC, is what's the end game in the King of the Cage in doing this? And that's the, you know, look, I understand that there's an aspect of you sign a contract, you honor a contract. I totally understand that. However, you're King of the Cage. Ultimately, what good's going to come out of this? Because I think what's ultimately going to happen now for King of the Cage is there are going to be ticket sellers they are going to want to put on their cards, and that fighter is going to say, no, I'm not interested unless it's a one fight deal. And I look for the end of the day, I go, what is the goal for King of the Cage at the end of the day in doing this? Is it simply, hey, you sign a contract? But I think it's also, and in that conversation right after what I said to Anthony Romero, I said, you know, kind of, hey, is it, it's, you know, a live and learn, you know, type situation. You know, when Anthony signed that deal, I do not believe he had management. He's now represented by Matt Dodge of Dodge Sports. And so, obviously, you know, one of the things of, you know, and I think it's a lesson all fighters, you know, if you're going to sign a multi-fight deal with an organization that's a quote-unquote exclusive deal that's not named UFC, Bellator, PFL, One Championship, Rising, you know, et cetera, et cetera, you should make sure that you have an out clause to go to the UFC, to go to Bellator, to go to Dana White's Contender Series, to go to PFL, you know, because obviously you're going to make much more money. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, is Anthony Romero going to make, you know, a guaranteed $5,000 a fight for King of the Cage? Unlikely. I don't know how much money he's making, you know, because I don't ask fighters that. But the reality is you know, he's honestly not going to make that amount of money. And so you feel awful for the fighters because it was an ability to advance their career. And, you know, you go back to the Draco Rodriguez situation where Terry, the owner of King of Cage, was saying how he's not, you know, he felt that he wasn't ready. And I'm like, that's not a decision for a promoter to make. It's not. That's a decision for a coach to make and a manager to make of whether you're ready or not. And I just, at the end of the day, it's just denying these fighters these opportunities. I don't understand why they think this is very beneficial to what they're doing. So at the end of the day, you feel awful about it. And I'll tell you, after I put, and by the way, that interview is up on theamereport.com right now, but when I put my tweet out initially about, you know, the fact of, you know, Romero confirming that, you know, he was denied an opportunity, you know, I got a lot of people who contacted me, some on the record, some off the record. You know, and unfortunately, this is the crappy part of regional MMA. This is just the crappy part of regional MMA that fighters have to go through. And it's unfortunate for Anthony Romero, but I'll tell you this, you know, one of the things that, you know, really has stuck out to me is how many people reached out to me over the last 48 hours and have gone, Anthony Romero's legit. This is a legit prospect out of Canada. And, you know, so he's going to have this fight in September for King of the Cage, and then it'll be interesting to kind of see what happens with him. You know, obviously by the time that happens, you know, Dana White's hinted about alluding to potentially another season of the Contender later on this year on UFC Fight Pass. It has been noted that you know, Fight Pass is going to go through a relaunch in October. You know, it does seem that we're going to see a lot of boxing on UFC Fight Pass. And look, I'm not a current subscriber of UFC Fight Pass. I just, for me, there, you know, I don't see, it's not a money situation for me. It's more of, I just don't see myself sitting there and, you know, going, you know, and watching enough content to where I justify it. I mean, and I'll be honest, I don't watch as much TV as I used to. I mean, you know, the past couple of days I've had a chance to, you know, over the weekend, you know, watch TV. Has pretty much, this was my last free weekend with NFL season beginning, you know, well, NFL season technically started for me about 2 weeks ago as for starting to prepare for, you know, Buccaneer Radio Network broadcast. As actually, I'll be heading to Pittsburgh tomorrow night, and then the Bucks play on Friday. So, you know, if you're in the Pittsburgh area, I'll probably be out on Thursday night, and then you know, stop somewhere after the game on Friday, on Thursday night and Friday night after the game. I'll probably stop somewhere. I know former Bellator fighter Mike Richmond now lives in Pittsburgh. Might try to see what he's up to, but yeah, it's you know, looking forward to going to Pittsburgh. You know, it's one of these things that, you know, the crazy thing is, like, my memory in terms of MMA is pretty good, but in terms of my memory of going to cities, I forget a lot. You know, there's only a couple of cities, like, I can remember, like, what I did. And, like, I was asking one of my buddies who I travel with for the broadcast, and I said, man, what do we do in Pittsburgh? And he's like, man, we were there like 2 years ago. I'm like, yeah, I totally don't remember. So I'm definitely looking forward to go to Pittsburgh. If you got any recommendations on restaurants, good bars to go to, good nightlife to go to, you know, tweet at me at Jason_Floyd. Would definitely appreciate that. So looking forward to the NFL season. But yeah, so I did have a chance to watch a lot of Netflix over last weekend. You know, it's funny, like, you know, I'm one of these Netflix watchers. I just binge watch, like, I binge watch Last Chance U, started watching season two of Punisher, you know, and a couple other things. And so, but I at the end of the day, I just don't watch a lot of TV. But, you know, if there was more UFC live fight night content of fights, I would have Fight Pass. But right now they haven't given me a reason. I mean, I've got ESPN Plus. You know, but there are times where they do have regional shows up there. I'm like, oh, maybe if I'm home, I'll do a month subscription of UFC Fight Pass. So I am interested to see what they do there. But, you know, maybe if there's a contender series, maybe a guy like Anthony Romero gets a part later on this year. But do want to wrap up this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast with round number 5, as going to talk about reasons to watch UFC Uruguay on Saturday. Of course, Fight Night card taking place on ESPN Plus, as Valentina Shevchenko going to defend her UFC flyweight title. She is a massive betting favorite. She is a 12.5-1 favorite against Liz Carmouche. You know, it's a fight that, you know, look, I expect to see, you know, Valentina Shevchenko go out there and just, you know, steamroll Liz Carmouche. This is a rematch. Valentina fought her very early on in her MMA career. You know, I remember last week on ESPN, she noted about how, you know, basically took the fight on 1 week's notice. So, but I firmly expect her to absolutely roll through Liz Carmouche here. But, you know, when you talk about reasons to watch, and I mean, look, I think the number one reason to watch would be Valentina Shevchenko. I mean, I think, you know, she is the number two women's fighter in the UFC, obviously behind Amanda Nunes. But to me, when you look at other reasons to watch, I mean, you got to look at that co-main event between Vicente Luque and Mike Perry. I mean, that to me, you know, you hate to sit there and say there's no way that fight could be boring, but that's a fight that you just look at and say there's no way that fight could be boring. I mean, you just feel like those are two guys who are going to bite down on their mouthpiece, stand in the center of the octagon, and they are just going to start throwing some bungalows, because that is the style of both of these guys. I mean, the question is going to be, is will one of them maybe try to, you know, work some takedowns in? But that is a fight that I absolutely love. That's a fun fight. That to me is a reason to, on Saturday night, I get back to Tampa on Saturday afternoon. You know, Saturday night, I'll be honest with you, Vicente Luque, Mike Perry, you know, really is the reason. You know, that's the fight on the card that interests me the most. I mean, look, from a fighter's aspect, I'm interested in Valentina Shevchenko, but in terms of fight, Vicente Luque, Mike Perry is just, that's a hell of a fight. And I think that's going to be a very fun fight to watch on Saturday. So looking forward to that one. I think he definitely had the favor of Vicente Luque in that one. I just think he's a more well-rounded, you know, striker on the feet. But, man, you definitely cannot count out Mike Perry in that matchup. You know, my third reason to watch this fight card would be another fight that's on the the main card, the light heavyweight matchup between Volkan Ozdemir and Lior Latifi. Of course, this fight was actually supposed to take place last week. However, the fight had to be moved to Uruguay because of Volkan Ozdemir having visa issues, which ultimately makes you kind of wonder where Volkan Ozdemir goes from here if he's unable to get a work visa to fight in the United States. But of course, you know, when you talk about Volkan Ozdemir, he came in the UFC in 2017, short nose fight, gets a split decision win over OSP, wasn't a great fight at all, but then he goes on an absolute back-to-back knockout wins, getting Misha Cirkunov and Jimmy Manuwa. You know, that Jimmy Manuwa fight was 2 years ago. He hasn't won a fight since then. You know, he's coming off losses to two of the top guys in the division, Daniel Cormier and Anthony Smith, and coming off a split decision loss against Dom Reyes, which, look, there is a case to be made that he actually won that fight. It was not a very good fight back in March, but can he turn this thing around? And for Lior Latifi, obviously he is coming off that loss against Corey Anderson back in December of last year, UFC 232. Prior to that, he had won back-to-back fights. But when you look at Lior Latifi's losses in the UFC, we're talking about Gegard Mousasi, Jan Blachowicz, and Ryan Bader, now Corey Anderson. This is all, the upper tier of the UFC division when, obviously Gegard and Ryan no longer in the UFC. I mean, one of the things that, you look at this fight is kind of, can Volkan Ozdemir kind of use that, size advantage that he is going to have in this fight? I mean, he does have a couple inches in the reach, a couple inches on the height. Can he use that to his advantage? So to me, that is a fight that definitely sticks out to me. The rest of the fight card, man, it's not a lot of name value. It's just being honest. I mean, when you look at fighters you may know, Bobby Moffitt taking on Enrique Barzola. Bobby Moffitt actually is one of the guys who has left the MMA lab and moved to Fight Ready. Earlier on the show, you heard my interview with Shakur Close, and the common denominator to all of that is Eddie Cha, who was the head striking coach at the MMA lab, and now he has left the MMA lab and Fight Ready. So Shakur Close has left the MMA lab. Bobby Moffitt left the MMA lab. I haven't talked to Henry Corrales yet, but it does look like Henry Corrales at least is training at Fight Ready. I know I'll be talking to Henry here in the next couple of weeks as we get closer to his fight in the Bellator Featherweight World Grand Prix. But the reason Henry Krauss went to the MMA lab was because Eddie Cha has been his longtime coach, and when Eddie got that job at MMA lab, he ultimately went down there. We'll be interested to see kind of if he has made that full transition, or maybe is he going back and forth between the two gyms. But that is a little bit of a story there in terms of the MMA lab. Now, in terms of the prelims here, the name that sticks out to you is Tisha Torres. She'll be taking on Mariana Rodriguez. Tisha Torres back at American Top Team. Obviously, she had done some training out in Colorado, but she has been training at ATT. And for Tisha Torres, I think the big thing for her is can she go out there and win by finish? I mean, that has been the knock on Tisha Torres throughout her career, and she only has one win by stoppage, and that was a submission win back in 2017 against Julianna Lima. Outside of that, all of her fights have gone the distance. And, look, you look at her losses, this three-fight losing streak that she's had, it's all against the top of the division. Jessica Andrade, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, and Wally Zhang, of course, going to be fighting Jessica Andrade for the title here later on this month in China. So, to me, Tisha Torres is someone that you do pay attention to. Of course, you heard Chris Gutierrez here earlier on in the show. Gilbert Burns is on this card. Of course, his brother earned a UFC contract last night on the Contender Series, and he's actually a small little favorite in that one. And I know me and Pete Rogers Jr. are trying to figure out if we're gonna have the ability to do this week's DFS show because of my travel schedule. I'm gonna try to get that thing cranked out tomorrow morning. Gilbert Burns, a slight underdog, I kind of like that at plus 125. Also, Chris Gutierrez, who we talked to, he's also an underdog on that card. He's at plus 110. To me, the three reasons to watch this fight card: Valentin Shevchenko, Vicente Luque versus Mike Perry, and Volkan Ozdemir versus Lior Latifi. I do feel that this is a fight card that, for a lot of people, it'll probably be a DVR card that you'll just watch after the fact. But that is coming up on Saturday. By the way, should be noted that we do have a PFL event coming up on Thursday. This is going to be light heavyweights. Heavyweights will be a part of this one, as it is going to start on ESPN2 at 8 p.m. Eastern time, and then the main card will be on ESPN Plus at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Kevin Tiller is going to be in the main event of this fight card, taking on Dennis Gostov. Both those guys did score 6 points in their opening round matchup. You got Satoshi Ishii versus Jared Rosschalt. Satoshi Ishii did get a win, getting 3 points. Jared Rosschalt did lose, so he's got a win. Vinny Magalhaes versus Rakeem Cleveland. Both these fighters did not get any points in the opening round, which, you know, to me, that is just a, you know, odd matchmaking to me that they put that one together, because Rakeem Cleveland has already fought Vinny Magalhaes before, losing to him last year in the PFL, and of course things have not gone well for Rakeem Cleveland in the PFL. He's only got 1 win, 3 losses, so we'll see if he can get that win against Vinny Magalhaes. You know, the rest of the card, you know, one of the guys that always kind of sticks out to me is just because I got a chance to see this guy fight here in the Florida regional scene, Muhammad Darius. He's going to be a part of the card on ESPN Plus as well. Alex Nicholson, of course, a name on that card. Jordan Johnson, let's see how he rebounds. You know, a guy that the UFC let walk after being undefeated, and he loses his PFL debut. And so that'll be on Thursday night. I will be traveling, so we'll not be able to watch that fight card. We'll watch it after the fact. So that is PFL on Thursday. Of course, UFC on Saturday. In terms of Bellator, of course, we're still a couple of weeks away from their next event. That'll be the card there in Connecticut in Bridgeport. It'll be headlined by Matt Mitrione and Sergey Karatov. If you've not heard of Vitaly Minnikov versus Javi Ayala, will be your co-main event. Also, it should be noted that Tyrell Fortune going to be a part of that main card as well. David Rickles going to be on that card as well. And put some also, you know, that the prelims, nice little prelim card. Austin Vanderfort's going to be on that card. Nick Newell is making his Bellator debut, taking on Corey Browning, who, you know, I mean, look, Corey Browning has been the B-side of the fight every time Bellator. He goes out there and keeps winning, so we'll see if he goes out there. So, you know, Bellator, obviously, kind of a little bit of a slow period for them. I think really the news concerning Bellator at this point is whether or not we're going to see Chris Cyborg sign with Bellator. So we will see what happens, but I do appreciate you taking time out of your day to listen to me talk about MMA. Daniel Galvan will be back next week on the podcast as we're going to get you ready for UFC 241. I really would appreciate if do me a favor, go over to YouTube, subscribe to the MMA Report on YouTube, trying to get those subscriber base up. So I really appreciate you that. Also, if you like what you're hearing, be sure to give us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting app. If you ever have a question or maybe there's a fighter you want to hear on the podcast, really the best way to do that is shoot me a tweet at Jason_Floyd, or you can send me an email, jason@themmareport.com, or just leave a comment on the post of this show or any post on themmareport.com. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on radioinfluence.com.
As the scales of summer slowly tip towards the fall and the Major League Baseball trade deadline is behind us, we're going to talk about the personal side of player moves, because there's a human element we often overlook. And as the fall approaches, our eyes are turning to hockey. Do you have a plan? If you're a serious player, coach, parent, or an administrator, we're going to have a very interesting talk with NHL certified player agent Manny Schmidt from Link Management International as we talk player planning this week on Crush Performance. Crush Performance, your weekly source for sport performance and athletic development information. If you're a serious athlete, a weekend warrior, parent, or coach, join us each week as we investigate the latest trends and research coming out of the sport performance world. We'll visit with top athletes, coaches, and sports scientists to keep you on the cutting edge and to find out what it truly takes to achieve human maximum performance. You can visit us online at crushperformance.com, and Crush Performance Radio with me, Jeff Kershaw, can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and at Radio Influence.